Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, yep, everybody is live. Welcome to the ABCs of Finance. I'm bringing everybody in live. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, we live, everybody. Welcome to the ABCs of Finance. Yvonne Janae, you here?
I am here. Good evening. How are we all?
Okay, how you doing? Mr. Solution, you here?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, how you doing? All right.
Hi.
Okay, I don't know, which one are you going to start today?
I'll just say this at the outset. You guys, I've just been standing level. You guys have a great operation, the way you work with Synergy. And what I'd like to say, I think I heard some of the last program, the first part, Jay Sean, when you were talking to Ms. Renee and Ray, Anne, R-A-E, I believe she spelled it. And so I would like to, and she was, I don't know, she could have been joking. She was asking me about credentials. There's a little bromide here. It says skills pay bills and degrees pay fees. So she was asking me about some degrees, and I wasn't sure where that came from. But I would like to include her in this circle, since she's a professional with hopefully appropriate degrees, and to have her share some of this, because I think the more people that get involved, ultimately the better it's going to be. Now, let me say this. I think that motivation is the major issue here. So you have motivation and you have some information. But the main thing is motivation, because the people are just going to have to be motivated to do whatever they know. And so I think that that's going to be the major focal point, is to get people motivated to do better, to make more money, you know, to understand this better. I have some real exciting topics, I think. But from last week, I think Ms. Evagene said that she wanted to deal with, I believe, taxes and how they connect with relationships. But one other thing, and that is money is the common denominator for everything we do. So if one fails at money, they're going to fail at everything. Make no mistake about it. Now, I don't consider that controversial, but if some people do, I would love to hear their intelligent and logical feedback.
I've talked to Ray about that, because she just came on my show as a guest, so I'll speak to her later, but another time. But Vajane, you got the floor.
So,
Jay Sean. Thank you. That's very good.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ms. Evagene.
Yes, Evagene speaking. I am in agreement with Mr. Solution, as a matter of fact, when she mentioned that she was a financial broker. I mentioned on that show when she said that it would be great if she joined in, because we're talking about finances, and there are people who are going to be listening in who are positioned and may view directional points on how to better use their money, or, of course, from beginning to end, people who are going to become ready. That's the idea of this, that people become wealthy. So, you know, definitely, if not her, I hope, you know, the plan is to bring on others during our mini-series of the ABCs of finance and investing and building wealth with insurance. During this series, we would like to add as many people as possible to share information with the listeners, The listeners are listening, and the listeners are teaching. So again, this is the ABCs. It's Let's Review, the ABCs of finance, investing, and building wealth with life insurance. And on our last program, Mr. Solution mentioned that he would like to speak to and about relationships and money. One thing we hear a lot of, whether it's a cliche or the truth, is that money causes many divorces. Finances causes many divorces. So we understand that the lack of knowledge will cause people to perish, and that's in many different ways, no matter what it is that you're doing. And yes, I want to bring taxes into it because how people file their taxes as individuals, as couples, as custodial and non-custodial parents affects their refund. It affects their refund. And these refunds are so substantial at times that it could be what leads them to the investment component. So, yes, it all kind of ties in. And Mr. Solution, if you'd like to begin, I have no problem with that. And again, thank you very much, Jayshawn. Keeping It Real with Jayshawn, this platform has allowed this type of show to come on to their weekly series of shows. And through September 26th, unless it's extended, we will be here. If you're listening to this recorded, you can call in on 563-999-3718 on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. But again, this show 7 days a week, mostly in the evening. And call in. And if you would like to ask a question, if you're listening live, you press 1. We will hear a doorbell. And when the person is finished speaking and when the time allows it, you will then be brought in with your comment or question. But we're looking forward to another fulfilled session. Mr. Solution?
Yeah. Now, I know I led last time, and I certainly don't mind leading this time, too. But I thought that tell me how you want to, if you want to bifurcate this, how many minutes would you like for me to go so that I won't overrun what you have planned?
Do it in the reverse. I can speak about the taxes, and then you can speak about the relationships if you like, if that's okay. Again, because the two will tie into each other. So what is your preference? And in terms of time, unless we hear a doorbell, I would say a good half an hour, 20 minutes, give it like 20 minutes, 25 minutes, unless we hear a doorbell in between. But then on that second half, then the next person could speak. How's that?
Okay, yeah. So in other words, you're going to proceed right now?
I can.
Okay, please proceed, because I don't want to, you know, take up time from you, because I want to share. I don't want to do it all. I have plenty of material here because I have notes, but yeah, proceed.
Okay, so my name is Yvonne A. once again, and I am a registered tax preparer. I've had my own practice for 18 years, and every year my business grows. My business grows because of the value I bring to my clients. I do lose some clients, but it's usually because I encourage them to learn how to do it themselves. I encourage them to learn how to do it themselves. But I'm always here for questions and answers. So I want to share some of the items in having your taxes prepared that affects your refund, Over a couple of years, people have complained that they didn't get back as much or that they owed and they didn't owe in the previous years. And the result of that is because the federal government changes the withholding charge. You could make exactly the same amount that you made last year, But if the federal government changes the withholding chart where they decide they receive less of a percentage during your work year, then you don't notice it necessarily. It's a few dollars here and there. But at the end of the year, when you receive your W-2 and your taxes are prepared, you may have had higher federal deductions in the previous years, you will have lower. That is their, I'm going to say, minimal way of creating a stimulus for you without telling you, unfortunately, because it becomes a shock. They didn't tell you they lowered the withholding chart, so you didn't realize that less was being withheld. Because the way taxes and tax return preparation works, it's a add and subtraction process. It's your income, your withholding, the amount of your withholding that after they give you credits for your children, your standard deduction based on your filing status, single, married, filing joint, head of household, based on your filing status, you'll get a standard deduction. And this is if you're not itemizing, which means that you have a house, you have interest, you have church ties, you have your other charitable contributions, you have your real estate taxes. All of those things allow you to itemize, but your itemized items must exceed or should exceed your standard deduction that they automatically give you as single, married, filing separate, married, filing joint of head of household. It should exceed that. Your itemized deduction should far exceed that in order for it to benefit your return. So, when this all happens, it's your income less your standard or itemized deduction that will bring you to your total taxable income. Your total taxable income is now different from your tax income that you work for because the government has now allowed you some deduction. So let's say you made $20,000 and they took 10%, they would have taken $2,000 in federal taxes from you. But now that you have your standard deduction or your itemized deduction, that $20,000 less the standard or itemized, which may be, let's go with $10,000, brings now your taxable income down to $10,000. Based on the withholding chart, that $10,000, if you were at a 10% tax bracket, the only amount of taxes you would have owed the government after that calculation would be $1,000, keeping it simple, $1,000. So they withheld $2,000. They gave you some credits off of your income. You were only due to pay them $1,000 after those subtractions. Now your refund is $1,000. That's how taxes are prepared. It's what you put in less the credits that they're going to give you. The total carries over, subtracted. What you put in is subtracted from what you should have put in, and that's where your refund comes from. Without the earned income credit, that if you are low income and you have children, your earned income credit, people don't understand, your earned income credit, it graduates with your income, it reaches a cap, and then it starts declining. So as long as you are within a low income tax bracket, your earned income credit per child, or even as a single person, they give you a bit, it will grow until you reach a certain number based on the number of children you're claiming. That should be yours, by the way. Then it starts declining as your income continues to graduate because now you're phasing out of the low income tax credit of earned income tax. that it's a low-income tax credit. So if your income continues going up, you're no longer qualifying for as much, and if you reach a certain point with your income, you could totally phase out of receiving earned income credit. But I will say to you that if you are low-income, if you do have children, and you do qualify for earned income credit, I have seen refunds between the federal and the state as high as $18,000 together. At least $12,000 federal, based on the number of children and the amount of income. That is, well, some people's full year salary. With that money, many people do many good things. Some people pay their utility bills for the whole year. Some people pay their rent if they're living in subsidized housing. They pay their portion of the rent for the whole year. They get a few things out of the way. Some people are kind enough to pay for camp for their children, pay for vacations for the family. But one of the other things people do on a safe level, they buy savings bonds. You can buy savings bonds through your tax return process. Now, we're talking about investment. We're talking about earning and building wealth. This is actually a great time for you to do one of those things or both of those things. I know people who started their policies during that season of taxes, and so that every year around the same time, their annual yearly premium is due. So with that lump sum from their refund, they pay that full annual premium for their insurance, which is good. Budgeting, we spoke about a little earlier in the first session. It's important to budget. When a person pays their utilities, their rent, their what would be monthly expenses a year in advance, now while they're working, they're able to take that same money as if they were going to pay it, and they're able to save and or invest it. So they're allowing that money to make money for them. If it's saving, it's making a little. If it's investing it, then they're making a whole lot more, ideally. There are different things that you can invest in. We'll talk about those. Mr. Solution will talk about those. Some of the most guaranteed would be CDs, which is a certificate of deposit you can purchase from the bank. It could be treasury bills. It could be municipal bonds. And the good thing about the treasury bills and the municipal bonds is that the municipal bonds are not taxed by the state. The treasury bills are not taxed by the federal, which is a benefit. And what's not taxed are your earnings on that money, are your earnings. So refunds are valuable. Here's the other thing I always mention to households that have children, but the parents are no longer together, married, divorced, separated, never married. If the non-custodial parent is participating effectively and financially in that child's life, I always encourage the custodial parent, if you're claiming the child, because there are agreements out there where they decide they alternate years, but if you're claiming the child as a custodial parent, the child lives with you, then allow the non-custodial responsible parent to use the child for the head of household status. And how does that reflect in the refund? It reflects in the refund because if the non-custodial parent is single, they may be getting, as an example, $10,000 standard deduction. But if they are head of household, which they would need a qualifying person, which would be that child, then they could get a $13,000 or $14,000 standard deduction. So remember, the standard deduction is what is automatically deducted from your income to bring down and make your taxable income what the IRS will be looking for taxes. So I say it's only fair, and do know that there are non-custodial and custodial parents that are of different sex. So there are some, and the mothers are the non-custodial parents. I don't get mixed in between women and men. I think about the unit, and the unit is the most important process in tax return processing. That the unit, what's going to best benefit the household, what's going to bring the most refund in legally into the household. So non-custodial parents, if they're responsible, again, financially and in that child's life, let them have the head of household status. You as a custodial parent do not need to have the head of household status with that one child, as well as claim the child, because that's a bit greedy and unfair to the non-custodial parent who is contributing, just not living in the house. You have education credits. Who do not know this, that you can get education credits for yourself, not going to college, but taking courses that you pay for to improve your job. There's still an education credit. There's called a lifetime learning credit. So there is the academic credit for going to college, American Opportunity credit for going to college, and then there's a lifetime credit if you're building your skill set. If you go to training to get your securities license, your fire guard license, if you go for a certification for phlebotomy or ultrasound, and you pay for it, even if you took a loan, which I think is very fascinating, that you're allowed to take the credit even if you took a loan and didn't pay out of pocket, whether it's college or the certification program. You get to still write off that tuition up to $4,000. So that's good. And then, of course, you know, if you have a student loan and you're paying interest on it, you get an interest in it. 98, you get an interest statement of how much money you paid to and toward your student loan. You get that as that's part of what is deducted from your income as well. If you are self-employed, do not have a W-2. Your income will come to you either in cash, so you have to account for it, or you will get a 1099 NEC, non-employee compensation. That 1099 is going to list the exact amount of money you were paid. Once you make sure that's accurate, cross-referencing your deposit, when you file that, you're going to file that on a Schedule C. That's a sole proprietor, independent contractor, business return within your tax return. That Schedule C is going to list a lot of expense categories. Well, here's the little secret. There are a lot of videos with a lot of famous people who are telling you how to keep more of your money when you're self-employed. It all depends on what you believe in. If you believe in Social Security retirement benefits, when we get to that age of discovery, or if you realize even before you get to that retirement age, the amount of money that is deposited into your Social Security will reflect how much money you receive monthly and your dependent children if you happen to become disabled before you reach that age. So how much money you're depositing into yourself with Social Security will factor into your monthly check if you're disabled, as well as your retirement check when you no longer want to work as hard, when you no longer want to work as hard after age 60. So some people, you'll see, again, all over social media, how to keep your money, how to keep your money, how to pay less taxes, and they compare it to our former president. Right? The more you expense down your income, the less you're paying into your Social Security. So keep that in mind. And one of the things that will happen when you're self-employed, when your taxes are prepared, you may owe. Well, don't think that you're owing someone who doesn't deserve it. Part of what you owe goes to the government. The other part of what you owe is going into your Social Security and Medicare. So you're paying yourself for your future. Keep that in mind. And again, your future could be tomorrow if you happen to become injured or ill and cannot work. Keep that in mind. It is your decision. It is your choice. I recommend if you're self-employed to go to IRS.gov and pull down the Schedule C. That's going to give you an idea of the different types of expenses that you will categorize your expenses in. But again, be mindful. You can also go and get Publication 17 off of the IRS.gov website. That will help you understand literally every line on the 1040 federal tax paper. That's for the individual. The 1040 is your individual tax return for the federal government. And the state pretty much follows, except there's a limit as to how much taxes you can claim, and that's now $10,000, whereas the state will allow you to claim or deduct. They'll allow you to put in the full amount. You can put in the full amount, but there's a cutoff for dollar, not dollar for dollar, and this is back to your itemized deduction. Pretty much the state follows the federal. The other thing a lot of people don't realize, and I want to share, there's something called a 1099-C, which is a cancellation of debt. That 1099-C is given to you if you happen to owe someone, a creditor, and usually a collection company will contact you and give you a payoff amount. So if you owe $4,000 and they contact you and say, well, we can take care of this, we can settle on $2,000, in January, you will receive a cancellation of debt, 1099-C, for the $2,000 that you save in that transaction because the IRS considers it to be income. So if you process anything like that, any kind of payoffs on credit cards or loans, any type of credit, the 1099-C will be coming to you, and it should come to us, your preparer. It should come to us. So again, when there's low income and children, there's a fairness in allowing everyone to participate in the process when they're participating in the process of taking care of the children, non-custodial, come to good agreement. What you do with your refund, again, goes back to budgeting, and I strongly encourage, okay, as a life insurance agent, I encourage life insurance because it's a way of investing in the market whole life. It's a way of investing in the market, the stock market, the investment market, without you having to do it. Because when you have whole life insurance and you pay your premium, the insurance company can do whatever they want to do with that money, and one of the things that they do is they invest in different products or services, but they share some of that return with you as cash value. So you're building cash value while you're paying a premium to protect your family in case of loss of life. So that's very important. I just would like to mention, and this will be the end and open for questions if there are any. During this time, I run a pre-season promotion. The pre-season tax prep promotion is $75. You pay today. We prepare in 2024, but you're saving at least 50% by paying early. And it's open to you, your friends, and your family, and it's open to everyone. I prepare nationwide, and you can reach me at You can reach me at 347-457-2769, and you could also email me at teamfollowme@yahoo.com. And that's for the tax promotion, or if you have any questions on insurance or would like to get insurance with you and your family. I thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to answering any questions and to the follow-up. And I didn't hear any bells, but we never know who's here and speaks. I'm listening. Okay, so Mr. Solution, if no one has any questions, thank you very much.
Okay, go, I think you were speaking. Finished? Have you finished?
I am finished, yes. Yes, I am
hey,
finished.
Good.
Thank you.
All right, sure. Good evening, everyone. I would like to go into, I want to discuss CBDCs a little bit of an update on the credit card companies. And let me just tell you, these guys, the credit card companies, are always digging up new schemes to wring money out of people. It's kind of comical in a way, but then it's a little bit pathetic also. Additionally, ultimately, I have a terminus. I have a goal that I would like to see virtually everyone become their own banker and their own insurance company. I don't hear people talk about that too much directly. In a roundabout way, they do, because when one, you know, has that, should I say, well, it's a year now. It's a full annual year of savings that one will have for emergencies, loss of a job, injury, or some sort of emergency, other emergency. Your automobile breaks down or your roof needs repairing or whatever. But when you have that year's savings, in a money market or a savings account, someplace that's easily accessible, then that is a type of insurance. That's definitely you have indemnified yourself. Now, but that's it. So become your own banker, become your own insurer. I think those should be foundational goals that most people would like to achieve. And then, of course, transmit all of this information to the young people in your lives. Now, with regard to the credit card companies, what they have done, in addition to raising the fees and interest, they can charge anywhere from, I say, 0 to 39% annual interest. And this is at the highest level, folks. These people lobby congressmen to allow them to do what they're doing. They're really stealing and abusing the public, but Congress allows them to do that because they pay Congress off, literally. Now, that 0% interest rate is to get you in. They know most people will not pay off their balance prior to the expiration of the 0% interest rate. So they got you. They got you, right? You haven't paid it off. Now they can jack that interest rate up, and they can start charging you fees, which what they will do right away, straight away. So just be aware of that. I want to talk a little bit about discounts, but before I get into discounts, discounts are very important. I love discounts. In fact, I won't say that. I was going to say I shop just for discounts. I don't really like shopping. I do shop some, but wealthy people, and I'm not defining myself as that, I'm just a concerned person from a financial standpoint. But wealthy people, I can say this about them. They love their discounts. I read an article about Gerald Ford once. Gerald Ford was a highly accomplished businessman. He served one term as president of the United States, but and Gerald Ford, like I said, he sat on a lot of boards, on a lot of corporate boards. So he was a very wealthy man, multi-millionaire. But Gerald Ford, according to the article, got in a fracas at a theater about his senior citizens discount at the time. Now, imagine this, a multi-million dollar guy sits on all these boards, but he wants his senior citizens discount. And it doesn't have to be a senior citizens discount. It can be any kind of discount. And just one other point on that, just to show you how small money adds up. And one of the books I'm going to recommend is The Millionaire Next Door by two economists. And all they did was interview millionaires. And I think they sent all of these guys at the time. This was a number of years ago. But the book is still popular. They sent a check for a dollar to all of these millionaires. And the average person who is not really in control of their finances, I don't know if they have a lot of respect for a dollar. But anyway, every one of those checks were cashed that was sent to millionaires for a dollar. This is reported in the Millionaire Next Door. So just understand, even very wealthy people do meticulously manage their finances, and they get help doing it too. You know, people like Ms. Evagene, you're going to need a team of people to help you get and stay wealthy. You're going to need tax preparers, because half of one's earning generally is paid out in taxes, and, you know, in addition to inflation. So, you know, we really have a job to do in order to stay ahead of the money curve, because there are so many things vying to take our money away and to lessen our money footprint. I want to speak briefly about it's Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC. Now, this is not good, people. This is not good at all, because there's always a broker with this particular money. And I understood there was a bank, I think it was a credit union. I think it was Navy Federal. You guys can check it out and maybe comment on it. But they shut down for several days, had people in lines. So you just need to be concerned that a lot of these banks and credit unions, but I think it's more so banks, are experiencing a lot of trouble. They bought a lot of bonds. That's where their money was. And, you know, bonds and interest rates are inversely proportional. As interest rates go down, bonds lose their value because people shift. They move their money where they can get a higher interest. So a lot of banks were heavily invested in those bonds. And then when the Fed, as crazy as they are, they raise the interest rates, it has thrown a lot of these banks into a financial tailspin. So just check your bank, because it would be a terrible thing to go there and find that it's closed when you need your money. So just, you know, be cognizant of that, be aware of that, and act accordingly. But now, again, cash is very good. If you go to CBDC's Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC, that's going to hurt a lot of people, elderly people, people who are unbanked. They don't have a bank account. That's going to hurt them tremendously. And it's going to allow the government to spy on you. Now, in the Constitution, if I recall correctly, I think it's the Fourth Amendment that allows people to be secure in their papers and effects and so on and so forth. And I know that's been rapidly eroded, true, but still there is a need for people to have some margin of privacy, some degree of privacy in their finances and not be watched at every angle. And if someone else is controlling the money vis-a-vis CBDCs, then, of course, what happens if there's a power outage? What happens if they don't like what you're doing? You recall, I think, in Canada during that trucker's strike, they were able to intercept the Bitcoin payments and just, you know, because the government had control over the banks, they were able to thwart the will of the people. So just be aware, if we do go to, and I don't think we will, not totally, because I understand that people are doing things right now to avert this sort of central bank digital currency being the norm, which means almost total control. If they don't like what you're doing, they can shut your money down, literally, right? And then even with credit cards, when you use a credit card, there's a fee. I mentioned that just a moment ago, that the credit card companies have raised the fees. No, I didn't, not thoroughly. The credit card companies have raised the fees to the merchants. When anyone uses a credit card, there is a fee that the merchant pays to the credit card company. So what credit card companies have done, in addition, as I said, to raising the individual fees, now they're raising the fees on the merchants. So some merchants are saying now they would prefer cash sales as opposed to credit card sales. But a lot of merchants are going to go along with it. And as they go along with it, they're going to have to raise their prices to you. In addition to inflation, they're going to have to cover the fees or the rise in cost that the credit card companies themselves are charging them for the use of the credit card. So what I'm saying to you is just look for another method of you having to pay more. You're paying a lot already, but you're going to pay even more. And this is just one way that occurs. Now, I tell people, and I'm just going to quote Dave Ramsey, I was doing it before I even knew Dave Ramsey, but you need to get out of debt. Getting out of debt is going to be one of the most important things that you could do, and teach your kids not to get in debt. There are young people that are in debt so far. I was watching a 60 Minutes episode of this. They don't know what they're doing with those credit cards. They're in like $70,000 worth of debt, and they're young. They're making $30,000, but they now have $70,000 worth of debt. And these are 22-year-olds, under 30. So their lives are pretty much just sold out. So that's one of the most important things I think you guys can do is get out of debt, tackle the smallest debt you have first. That tends to be the psychology, to pay off the smallest one first. Some people would say, well, I should pay off the biggest one first. No, most people can't do that. Pay off the smallest one first and just work your way through it. And what we would like to hear, or at least certainly I would, is for people to call in as you're working on this. Say when you get a quarter of the way through, debt reduction, halfway through, that means you've paid half of the debt you owe. And this can be done, I say, in under 5 years. I'm thinking two to four years, but there has to be a concerted effort. When you get to 75%, right, and you're almost there, and then, of course, you pay off all of your debt, you're going to feel differently. You're going to feel your life is going to take a dramatic change once you're out of debt, because now your money is yours. No one is hassling you and hounding you, because when you owe people, make no mistake about it, they're going to let you know it. So are there any questions at this particular point? And I want to recommend, I always like to recommend a couple of books. Let's see, I'm going to go with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mentioned it before, but I'll keep doing so. The Millionaire Next Door, Think and Grow Rich. That's Napoleon Hill, The Millionaire Next Door, Danko. There are two economists that wrote it, and they may have a sequel. They may have a follow-up. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is Robert Kiyosaki, of course. The Seven Baby Steps, I believe that's to a Millionaire. I think it's Seven Steps. That's Dave Ramsey. And I like his focusing on debt. And so, again, you guys kind of share the wealth as you are progressing through eliminating your debt. Oh, wow. That was a big sound. What does that sound
like,
by the way?
How you doing, Dr. James?
One second. Mr. Solution, are you finished your comment? You were listing the different books. One second, Dr. James, please.
Yeah, I'm not finished, but I know that when callers come in, I think we sort of accommodate them. So go ahead.
No, I can let you finish. Go ahead, finish.
Well, no, while your question is hot, I have more than enough information. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, there's a couple of questions. Now, I had one for Biden Nay, but I'm going to wait on that because you're the one talking now.
Okay, sure. All right. That's
so
fine.
Let me ask you. So you're talking about the Bitcoins, right, as far as investing in them. Is that what you're
referring to? No. We can certainly talk about some investment options at a certain juncture, but I was just talking about how the Canadian official intercepted the Bitcoin of the people who were trying to, I think they were assisting the striking truck drivers. But continue.
All right, so you wasn't talking about, I know that we have, in the past, there's different opinions as far as buying Bitcoins and not. What is your opinion?
Well, you know what, I have a very small opinion, and my position is no. I don't like it. I wouldn't deal with it personally, but that doesn't mean it's not for some people. Maybe that question could be shared with Ms. Evagene, because she knows about it and she's okay with it. I think it's I kind of take the Peter Schiff or the Austrian economic perspective. You know, there are two. The Austrian perspective, which was Ludwig von Mises, and, of course, John Maynard Keynes, which is the position that most countries have taken, that is debt financing. But Bitcoin, it violates everything I've known in terms of investing. There's no there. It's computer code. And people are stealing it. If you don't have your own wallet, I think it's totally monitored. I don't think it's private. And right now it's sinking like a rock, and it's been called fool's gold because the only real value in Bitcoin that I understand is that you're waiting on someone else to pay a higher price. The current holder is holding it, waiting for someone else to pay a higher price. And I think most of the institutional investors dumped it. You remember it was at, if I recall correctly, more than double what it is right now. So, you know, I don't think it's been compared to gold, right? Now, I am going to talk about money a little bit and what money is, and I'm going to encourage people to look it up. But Bitcoin really doesn't fit any of the descriptors of what money is. Store of value, well, we can certainly debate that. Go ahead. Have I responded to anything that you're asking?
Yeah, you're fine. And the last question I got for you is, what do you think is the best investment to increase your wealth? Is it one investment or is it multiple? Which one do you think is the best?
Well, wisdom, common wisdom of dealing with investment, going back thousands of years, diversification. Diversification, I think, is very, very important. And I often quote Robert Kiyosaki, where he says, "If you look at three investments out of five, which is 60%, then one has been successful in investing. If three investments out of five make a profit for them, that's considered successful. And anything above that, 60%, is, of course, even more successful. But, yeah, diversification is going to be crucial. One doesn't want to put all their eggs in one basket. That's the old adage. I think that's wisdom. But I think maybe what we should do, since you raised this issue, I would say do a little bit of research if you haven't done it already, and then come and present some options. I've said to people, for example, last week, I spoke of stocks. People have heard of stocks. I would say get some stocks, some good stocks, even dividend aristocrats. And those are considered stocks that have paid a dividend at least for the last 25 years, regardless of economic conditions. And stocks that pay dividend increase the value faster, especially if the dividends are reinvested, right? And some people they actually live off of the dividends that are produced by the stock. Real estate is one. Real estate is a very interesting investment vehicle, unlike any other. It's kind of an outlier, and we can talk about some of the benefits of real estate, because actually one of them, you can live in it. You can't live in any other investment that I know of besides real estate. And, of course, bonds. We just spoke of bonds. Bonds are being slaughtered right now because of the interest rate rise, right? They're inversely proportional. Bonds lose their value as interest rates rise because people put their money where they can get a higher interest. And of course, commodities, you know, pork bellies, wheat, corn, all of those are cattle, right? Commodities, gold, silver. Now, I have Bitcoin listed here, and I put a question mark by it and an ellipsis, a question mark and an ellipsis, which means it's questionable, but we can say more about it. Rugs, I would encourage people to just go on the Internet, because even if this does kind of fly over your heads, it's going to hit your children squarely in the chest, because they're going to have to deal with this. But anyway, rugs, and, you know, there's pretty much several investments, I think, that will fit everybody's taste. Paintings, there are people investing in paintings. I understand there are decent returns on paintings now, you know, Van Gogh, so on and so forth. And loans, lending money, that CDs and what have you and other methodologies, that's where you're giving your money for a certain amount of time to receive a certain return. So there are just so many investment options. So I'm encouraging people to step forward just like you are doing, which we appreciate, because this shows interest and it shows intent. And I'm going to say more than informing people, because I think people do have some knowledge of what needs to be done, but they need to be motivated. Motivation is going to be absolutely essential. And the more you talk about something, the more potentially people are motivated by it. So talk about it. And if they're just listening, just kind of, you know, lackluster right now, as one talks about it more, it starts to become part of their thought process, and that's what you really want. So these are just some examples of, you know, some of the common investment vehicles that people might use. Go ahead. Do you have a comment?
I want to ask about couple questions. Let me ask you a question. What do you think is the best investment to improve your wealth?
Again, it all depends on what you're trying to do. So real estate can definitely do it. And real estate, as the solution says, you have several options. You can buy and flip. That helps people get into new homes or, into their home, and you get a return on that. You have commercial real estate, and I mentioned before Warren Buffett. He has mutual funds with the commercial real estate products in it. You don't have to always touch it. I personally like, again, it depends on what you're trying to do. If it's for stability, it could be a mutual fund. It could be T-bills, treasury bills. The municipal bonds are good for the tax benefit of it because the money isn't taxed by the state because you're helping the state. And ideally, I always say, too, that if you're invested in something that's making money, take some of that made money out and put it someplace else. That's going to make you more money while your original money is still making you money, if that is an option in that type of investment. With investments, it's the unknown, but if it works, it really works. So you can choose to put some of your money into, when I say questionable, it's because the agenda makers haven't solidified how they can control it. That's how I feel about digital currency, cryptocurrency, and all the things that are happening with it. So if the agenda makers can't find a way to control it and to keep the 99% from becoming part of the 1%, then they'll put out information to negatively impact how people see it. There are a lot of wealthy now people who were not wealthy before, and they're wealthy because of the digital currency, the cryptocurrency. J.P. Morgan had warned their employees not to buy Bitcoin. P. Morgan has a coin. So some people are into the wait and see, and some are into the wait until I tell you to do so, because that's just a habit. It's a habit. Of course, I believe that life insurance, whole life insurance, is a great way of building wealth, especially, and it all depends on your age. It all depends on your age and how much time you have to see your return. So that will also determine how you're going to choose your product. I love stock splits. You look at the stock split chart. It comes out monthly. And you can see, you can kind of, put that in on a search bar. Don't want to say anybody, you're not paying me. But no, you can Google it, and it will show you what the chart is for the month, or it might give you a two-month chart of a stock split. And if you could afford it, and if it works for you, you have two options. You can purchase it and be in the, or you can wait until the split if you've investigated the company, the corporation, and found that you believe in them, but maybe you can't buy in because their per stock price might be too much for your budget, so wait until after the split, because after the split, each stock is going to go down. That's why it splits like that. And then you can buy in and, watch it grow. There's one that I've been looking at, HCMC, and again, as a disclaimer, no one here is a financial investor or security exchange registered agent. We're just sharing information among one another as we are supposed to. So CMC was in a lawsuit with Philip Morris. Well, that got my eye because I don't believe that Philip Morris would be in a lawsuit with anyone unless there was something valuable to sue about. And right now they're like, I think, 4 or 5 zeros and then a one. So they're very low as a stock, a penny stock, below a penny. But if it grows, it's going to do very well in my portfolio. If you see something about it, it's all about your feeling. So some people walk into a room where the music should be playing and it's not playing and they walk out. Some people walk into the room where the music should be playing, it's not playing, and they turn on the switch. It was just a matter of turning on the switch. So we're all different individuals, and it all depends on how you walk, how you step. Never do you invest your last into anything. So you always want to invest what you are willing to lose with the hope that, of course, you will gain. But you don't want it to ruin your life.
You know what? I have another question. If a person like me, because you mentioned age, I'm 63 years old. So because of my age, I'm not really looking for a long-term investment. I mean, I could be, but that would be, you know, who knows how long I'm old I'm going to live to. What type of product should I be leaning towards?
I would probably partner and buy and flip, depending on how much money you're working with. So that's the determining factor as well. So if you moving in your passion, okay, so I'll say that. For an individual who's looking to invest and would like to see a rate of return, think about what you're passionate about. Think about how that passion can turn into an investment or what can be invested in that can fulfill you regardless of the direction it goes in. So I would say you would need a little bit of a team of people, but I would buy houses and flip them. And I say that because you're going to get a quick return. You're going to get a quick return because you're not going to try to sell it. I wouldn't try to sell it at what someone else says is the market rate. If you can get it below rate and make $10,000, $20,000 on each deal versus a real estate broker telling you you can make $70,000 or $80,000, $20,000 or $30,000 or $10,000 to $30,000 is good for you because you're getting back yours plus that, and now you'll have that to do that something else with. But most importantly, without the professional broker telling you you could get another 80 or 90, which means somebody else has to get a mortgage for all of that, you're helping families get into homes. You're helping people get what they want while you're also getting what you want, and everybody's happy. And then literally flipping deals at the table. People are investors, are purchasing with the new buyer at the same table and flipping houses just that quickly now.
But when, first of all, the average house, depending on where you're living at, say New York, for example, from what I hear, you can't really get a house in New York for less than half a million. And you probably can't get that. That'll probably be some kind of abandoned building or something. So how much does it cost to get started approximately? I know you don't know exactly. To get started with flipping houses, and where would you flip them at? Like which location? New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut? I mean, what area would be a good area to flip these houses where you know, maybe you can get the houses a little bit cheaper than if you bought them, say, in Brooklyn, where they're going for close to $1 million each.
I believe Detroit was a good market. Detroit was a good market. Philadelphia was a good market. I feel like would work for you. Based on your passion, what do you feel like you could invest in that you would be happy with regardless of how much you got out?
Well, see, the key, like you said, is I would need assistance or a partner or whatever, because before you buy something, say in Detroit or Philadelphia or somewhere else, if you're looking for a bargain, you're probably going to have to buy in a depressed area. And you have to have someone or you, someone that knows about houses, to look at that house. I mean, you could probably buy it through a picture, but I don't know, well, you know, you really probably want to see it yourself.
Well, let me make this recommendation just briefly, if I may. I would say that I would hit up my community college and take some sort of general contracting course. See, we talk about opportunity plus preparedness equals success. Or you know, so one has to be prepared to get in these industries and make and earn money. You know, fields just don't give up money for free. I think we all can pretty much acknowledge that. So I would get some general contracting knowledge so you know pretty much comprehensively what you're dealing with, because either you are going to have to do the work or someone else. And usually when one has to farm the work out, that's always going to cut into your profits greatly. And so whereas if you're capable of doing the work, most of the work, and, you know, even with the getting prepared, that is taking these general contractor courses, you can probably kind of barter with someone to get it fixed up for less. So the less you have to pay out, the more potential earnings that you'll recoup or earn. Because it's expensive, let me tell you, in any place, it's pretty expensive fixing up real estate. From the getting the products and the labor, both. So
I know.
General
and
contract,
in many,
go ahead.
In many municipalities, they to do this work, you have to have permits from the town or from the city. And the city and the towns, they want you to use licensed contractors like licensed electricians and licensed plumbers to do certain work. You can't, like in the olden days, people would just fix it themselves. If you knew how to do a little plumbing, a little electricity, you can get away with that. But now these towns and cities, you have to get permits, and they want to see a license, you know, as far as who's going to do the work, you know, before you
Because let me just say, being a general contractor would help one navigate that. You're right. Cities want to make money. First of all, everybody's out to make money. They make money off the fees and what have you. And then there is a safety issue, certainly, with the plumbing and the electricity and possibly some of the structural aspects of it. So that's why I would recommend – I didn't get in real estate myself. I mean, I could have, and maybe I should have, but I really didn't I wasn't that partial to it. But were I partial to it, I would do what I'm advising, and that is take a community college course on general contracting. That makes you familiar with all the different city regulations and so on and so forth. I think it would make things flow a lot more smoothly. I believe.
Well, I think I would probably rather just get into buy it, sell it.
I want to deal a little bit with dating, if you don't mind.
You know what I mean? Like, just sell it, regardless of what condition it's in, and let the next man fix it.
Well, yeah, I would like to, if you don't mind, to deal with dating and money just a little bit, because those two go hand in hand. I want to make a little bit of a disconnect.
Fine.
If that's okay, yeah. And you may have a question on this, too. Now, I've been cautioned to, you know, work on my delivery, so, yeah, I don't mind improving and that sort of thing. So I'm going to work on it a little bit. Now, I'm going to open just by saying I think the man should pay for everything, okay? The man should pay for everything, but he should only pay for everything with a woman who has proven herself. And since we're talking, and most people understand how hard it is to acquire money, it's not only hard to acquire money, it's hard to maintain money, too. Because believe it or not, there are a lot of psychological and other forces endeavoring to remove your money from you. All kinds of forces, forces that many of us aren't even aware of yet. And I think Ms. Evagene would agree that going out, I'm just going to use it in its generic form first, and then I'm going to drill down to the specificity. Just going out costs a lot of money. Just eating out, because there are a lot of charges. Most people charge it on that credit card, and they don't pay for it, so they're going to pay more for everything by credit card. Then you got the parking fees, depending on where one resides, and, of course, the tip, and all of that. So it would cost literally a small fortune for a family of three or four to eat out regularly. But it's very expensive for one person. And I'm getting to the nub of this in when most financial advisors counsel their client, one of the things they look at is where they're bleeding. And usually that's in entertainment, which is part of eating out, vacations, generally entertainment, subscriptions, maybe cable. They're looking for all these areas to cut back, right? They want to pare back. And so with men, since men, you hear women say exclusively, they don't pay for dates, they don't ask men out, they don't pay. They never pay. And a lot of women, amazingly, even in this era, the 21st century, where women have equality, women are still saying, I don't pay, no, I don't expect to pay, I expect a man to pay. Okay, I hear you. So men should pay for everything, but only to those women that have met a certain criteria threshold. Not every, woman that you, I would say stray woman, because you don't know her, so she is stray, strange, feral, whatever. You shouldn't be paying for her because she's meaningless to you. You don't know who she is 2 weeks after the date, but you've spent money that it took you quite some time to acquire. So dating is a major source of bleeding. It's on the comparison of an aorta bursting, or your aorta bursting. You bleed out real fast. So this is what guys should do is hey, I was listening to a guy on the other side of the globe saying, and I agree with this, I've said it myself, go on coffee dates. Go on dates that cost, especially first dates, that cost zero. Because you don't owe this person. You don't know this person. You don't owe this person. So go on dates That can be very fun because you're trying to get to know the person, which is very, very important. And if a person is just insisting on, and I only had this happen one time. This person wanted to be taken out to a four-star restaurant. And no, absolutely not. You don't deserve it. I don't know you that well. No way, no how. That's not being cheap. It's simply being wise. This person is generally not interested in you if they're insisting on an expensive meal. So, guys, you don't have to do that, and you shouldn't do that. And you need to teach this to your young people. Let me just give you a classic. I think this is a joke. It's a little bit of a joke, but, you know, jokes have a lot of truth attached to them. This was involving a brother and a sister. And they were alone one day, and the brother asked the sister, because he was broke, he says, "Why am I always broke and you have money?" And the sister took a moment's pause, and she said, She says, "I know why." She says, "Because I have a boyfriend and you have a girlfriend." So having a girlfriend, look, if the woman is worth it, great. If she's worth spending money on, fantastic. No problem, because if you followed the methods of money acquisition, you've acquired enough money, it doesn't matter that much. It matters, but it doesn't matter that much. You're not breaking the bank, right? And so this is the thing that men particularly have to be aware of because of women's insistence. So don't take a woman out on a first date. And Ms. Evagene, you know, she said she has a grandson, and I'm sure she's concerned about his economic well-being. So this is something that women can sort of veer off from the American sisterhood and say to young men, look, you need to preserve your wealth. That's your seed corn. That's what you need to ultimately build your wealth. And if you keep blowing it on women who you can't even remember who they were 3 weeks, you know, down the line, you need to stop that. So this is something that women could step up to the plate and share with their nephews, their brothers, you know, and so on and so forth. Say, I'm a woman. I would like it if a guy took me on a walk in the park. I would like it if a guy just invited me out to a coffee date because, after all, I'm there to enjoy his company, not just enjoy what I can pilfer and purloin out of him, you see. It's not about getting the bag, contrary to what some people might think. So I think those are some Okay, what is that? Someone maybe needs to mute. But anyway, am I still on? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. So let me ask you, sir, I didn't get your name. Would you recite it again for me?
This is Dr. James. Dr. James, how you doing?
Dr. James, yes. So what do you think about that advice to young men in terms of spending their money frivolously on dates when they should be saving it?
Well,
do you think
that's
good advice, first of all? I guess that's my...
let's put it like this. I don't think it's always frivolously. Because of the fact that...
I'm sorry, wait a minute. Say that again. I didn't quite catch that.
It's always frivolously. I don't think it's always that, because what you said was, you said they shouldn't spend their money on a quote-unquote worthless woman, and...
Well, one that's worthless to them. I don't know if I use the term worthless, but if I did...
We won't use that word then. But you said
who doesn't have any significant either present or future meaning to them. But their money is...
What I'm trying to tell you is that you could have a young man in college, say he's in college, and there could be a woman that goes to his school that he wants to take out. And maybe, because I'll just tell you, when I went to medical school, there was the one of the ladies that went to school with me, her uncle was the senator. Her uncle was, I don't know if you remember this senator from New York, Alphonse D'Amato. Remember him? D'Amato. He was a senator in New York. But
it doesn't ring a bell right away, but continue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was down when Reagan was in there. So his niece went to school with me, and he walked around me, coached on and so forth. You know, she was very high class. So I didn't never go out. But if I went out with her, probably expect me to spend big money on a restaurant or whatever the case. Now, what I'm trying to say is some people might say, well, he might be worth it. But then again, he might not. He might just have me spending up my money and still don't even bother with me. Now, I could find a woman, that's a regular woman that I liked in school. There's nothing spectacular. Her mother and father just had regular jobs. And she might be a very, very smart and nice person, and she may be able to give me information, advice, and encouragement that may lead me to make tremendous amounts of money, much more, quote-unquote, aristocrat, walking around with the mink coats on. So you can't always say that this one is worth it and this one is not. That's why
let me ask you something,
you know,
just for clarity's purpose. It was the woman that was walking around with the mink coat?
Yeah, the senator's niece.
Okay, okay. I just wasn't clear on that. Yes, go ahead.
Full-length mink coat, yeah. And she was, you know, uppity. What I'm trying to say is that I could have took her, if I went out on a date with her, I never asked her, but I could have spent $1,000 on a date or, you know, close to that. And that might not have got me nowhere. And some
people
might
say, what do you mean, get you nowhere toward what? What was the destination?
If your destination is to meet friends and get married and socialize and like you said about people being, when you spend money on someone that's worth it, I guess the intentions are to socialize with more of a higher class.
Okay, well, let me address that just briefly. One of the ways that's going to be proven, the best way to vet someone is through quality time, right? Quality time is going to be, and adult communication. Those are the two best ways to vet someone. Because if the person is not really interested in you, they're not going to spend the time. We make time for that which interests us. We make time. Okay. So those are the two vetting tools that a guy or a woman, those work both ways. Quality time and adult communication. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, you never know who's going to be worth it. That's why I have to say
that. Well, I'm telling you how to know.
Oh, no.
I'm telling you how to know, how to vet a person. Quality time, right, consistency, and having meaningful conversation. Do you think that'll work?
I have never gotten to the point of spending quality time to his niece unless I took her out to some fancy restaurant. Maybe.
Okay,
but then
that may not be worth it. See, that's a gamble, and that may not be worth it. See, if a person – look, people are attracted to people for a reason. There's something about everyone that everyone connects with that they are interested in. So if – now, there was a guy that said – and I didn't say this, but someone said it. He said all women are prostitutes because you've got to pay for access. You got to pay for access.
Mr. Solution, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello. Okay, thank you. So
go
I
ahead.
Just want to say we have 5 minutes left to this session.
Okay, sure.
On the 8th. Hold on a minute. On the ABCs of finance, investment, and building wealth with insurance. So
okay.
we want to start to close, and we don't want to not invite anyone else to come back. We want people to come back and listen in, and
right.
you can continue the conversation on relationships and finances.
Oh, God, Jesus.
And then there's Friday. So.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Say that again. What did you just say?
And then there is Friday.
I'm just simply saying this is very germane to the conversation, especially from men's vantage point. One of the ways to really save and preserve wealth is not to spend it frivolously. Dating, you know this as a budgeting. You do budgeting, right? You advise people about budgeting?
This is a statement in general.
No, I'm just asking you a question. You advise people about budgeting, right?
I do, but 1 minute, Mr. Solution. 1 second, please.
Okay, go ahead. Because I want to finish this thought.
When it comes to spending money frivolously,
yes.
whether you're going on a date with a woman, a date
right.
with a man, partying on the weekend, or men are going out to the cigar bar, it's all
right.
about within your means and with the expectation of what you're going to get out of it.
Right, but let me just say this to you. A major expense for men is dating, particularly young men. That's a major expense. It's major. It's not minor.
Okay.
So if they can find a way to navigate that, then, of course, that is something that has to be dealt with. Because just like the guy who was complaining to his sister that he's always broke. And so this is something, it may not be the easiest thing to deal with, but it needs to be dealt with. Because a lot of men, based on their entertainment, i.e. dating, et cetera, they're broke. They don't have any money.
Understood. So.
All right. All right, sure. This is a subject that will not die, and it'll be dealt with in a variety of platforms. So, did I deal with it somewhat gingerly? There was that okay? Was that acceptable?
I caught you. Yes, sir. So.
Okay. Good. Glad to hear it.
What we're going to ask, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, on this point that we ended with, in terms of what's the cost of dating and how can you best budget to make sure you're not overspending. When we return, we date wisely, spend appropriately, and come back and let us know next week. How's that, Mr. Solution?
Yeah, that's not, let me just say, kisses, that sounds beautiful. And one other thing, I want to go into a little bit of the history of money, and I want to encourage people, see, we're talking about money, but a lot of us don't know money's history. From salt being money, that's where the word salary comes from salt, which is what Roman soldiers used to be paid in. And so we'll deal with some of the historical aspects of money.
Next week, we will see you. Thank you for coming. Thank you.
All right.
Maybe I see you working hard, wanna let you know, and probably let you know that I admire what you do. Don't know if I need to reassure you, if my life will be purposeless without you. If I want it, when I ask you, you inspire me to be better. You challenge me for the better. Sit back and let me find